Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Here we go then, it's Parkcast episode 5, and Alex, you are finally back, you've returned.
Have you missed me?
Oh, of course, I'm just waiting for my present.
You might be waiting a little bit longer on that
awkward.
One, Becca.
Awkward.
Do apologise.
Alex has been off for a while, as I said on the last week's sort of mini episode. Very rudely disappeared off to America for 3.5 weeks.
Just a little trip that one. Just a small holiday.
Just visited a couple of parks along the way.
Just 20, not too many.
So obviously it was your strata trip, which you did with Sean from Theme Park Worldwide.
It was amazing. Before you ask, I know you've got so many questions.
I've got so many questions. So in this episode, definitely going to be covering that and finding out a bit more about what you really thought about some of those parks and disappointments and highlights and all of those things. So many questions on that. But first of all, as we start every episode, it's this week's Highs and Lows.
Highs and Lows.
So I don't know about you, but I've kind of felt like a load of news is breaking at the moment.
I think we're really missing out on like some of the key things here. And Becca and I have just been discussing how many things have really happened over the last few weeks. I feel like I've missed every major announcement. Before I went to America, I was having a conversation with Becca about, oh, I wonder what the future of like things like Merlin Entertainments is going to be. And oh, if Paramount, you know, in London will ever actually happen, the London Resort. And then suddenly, you know, flash forward a couple of months later, and there is so much news, so many things to talk about across the world. For me, I've got to start by saying, and I'm sorry to tell you, Becca, it's not quite here yet. It's over 100 days away, but Christmas is coming.
Oh, no.
Christmas is coming.
You can't mention the C word yet on
very,
this podcast.
Very, 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 very soon. And it's a good time to talk about Hyde Park Winter Wonderland, which are already getting their Christmas announcements out there for the year. They've announced the dates of the event. It's going to open at 4 p.m. on the 21st of November, so just 2 weeks from the closure of Alton Towers for those who do tend to visit during the close season, who get the close season blues and want to get on some coasters. And it's going to be 10 a.m. till 10 p.m. every day until the 5th of January 2020. Obviously, that excludes Christmas Day and New Year's Day. Winter Wonderland. Becca, have you been? I don't actually know if you've been.
I haven't, because I am a little bit nervous of travelling funfairs.
That's understandable.
A little, especially coasters, because you just think, oh, they have put that out very quickly.
They have, but I mean, Winter Wonderland is not just some little coasters that go around to Poxy Fun Fairs. There's so much more than that at Winter Wonderland. Obviously, you know, we have had some classic rides and attractions there over the years. Wild Mouse XXL, XXL, which is an incredible travelling flat ride. And of course, Munich Looping, or as it's known at the event, Olympia Looping.
That's the one with the five loops.
It looks like the Olympic rings, but they can't say that because it's a copyright issue. So they can't actually say that at the time. So Winter Wonderland are already getting the announcements out there. The first thing they have already announced, what's new for 2019, is they are having a brand new giant Ferris wheel that is made exclusively now for Winter Wonderland. It's going to be a massive, massive Ferris wheel. I can't actually remember how big it is, but I know it's going to be 15 metres bigger than the one they had previously,
wow,
which was already huge. It already towered over London.
Is it bigger than the London Eye?
It's going to look like it when you're still on the ground in front of it, let me tell you that. Return of the comedy tent this year. And something that's very, very interesting, and they have actually mentioned this very clearly, that something is leaving Europa Park in Germany to come to Winter Wonderland this close season, so
really?
Shall we to speak. Yes, they always have an ice show every single year at Winter Wonderland, and this year it's Paddington on Ice, which was the production that was put together for Europa Park earlier this year. Very, very popular show. It's going to be really nice to see that in a UK environment. I'm sure it'll be quite expensive because typically Winter Wonderland is, it's free to enter, pay per ride.
Yeah, so you can't get a wristband, or can you get a wristband?
You can get a season pass, which is like so many hours worth of rides.
Right.
And it brings the price of each ride down. The more you do, the more you save. But generally, it can be quite an expensive event. If you're looking at doing some big rides and attractions, you could spend up to £100 in one visit.
Does
you know.
It get busy?
The rides don't tend to get too much of a queue. It can be pretty steady. But again, pick the right nights. If you're going to go to a weekend, you're going to expect big crowds. Saturday night, particularly, the bars are full, the rides are full. If you really wanted to take advantage of those quieter days, Monday to Wednesday, just like a theme park, go there and capitalise on the quieter days.
But something to look forward to. I guess it's quite a nice Christmassy thing to do.
Oh, you said the C word. You said it.
I know. Well, you've already... That's it now. I'm sure there's more Christmas stuff to come as well. But yeah, being in London and experiencing that, or whilst it's all cold. And like you say, you can't get on coasters anywhere else at that time of year.
Of course you can't. No, and they're always running. They're very reliable and they do look after you. It's a good atmosphere. Great event. Really worth going down to check that out. Speaking of Europa Park, obviously I mentioned that Paddington on Ice had moved is moving locations just for that winter event in London. It's actually quite sad to talk about this, really, but Europa Park are currently having a difficulty with Voden Timber Coaster, their big wooden roller coaster at the park, because the lift hill chain that actually pulls the train from the bottom of the lift hill to the top before sending you around the roller coaster has snapped. It snapped into pieces.
There's going to be mass panic everywhere. Don't let the Daily Mail get hold
of
this.
I know.
Everybody, theme park terror.
Everybody keep their voices down. We'll say it really quietly. There's a lot of German theme park news this week. A lot of lows for Germany
in
theme
reality,
parks.
In reality, how has that happened?
I'm not too sure. I mean, I could say it's a maintenance issue, but I would be very surprised if, you know, a park like Europa Park that have a very, very good safety track record would allow something like that to happen. Obviously, nothing's indestructible. You have to consider that. You know, even roller coasters, everything can, with an impact, you know, cause damage. It could be down to weathering. It could have been down to excessive weight on the train. You just don't know what caused that, obviously. I don't believe anybody was injured from the event. It was just a lift hill chain. There were guests on the lift hill on the train at the time. They were safely removed. But obviously that is a low point because now the coaster is going to remain closed until that chain can
and
be repaired.
And you do wonder, it's a GCI, isn't it? So has it got any implications for others around the world?
It's
are they
difficult.
Going to be checking
it's
them
difficult.
All?
Are they going to just be testing them all out? Because they all operate a very similar system anyway. Certainly the more modern GCI roller coasters from 2010. But obviously, with Europa Park being ran by the Mack family, who do have a lot of parts, and I'm sure the maintenance is great because they are manufacturers in their own right. However, this is a coaster that hasn't been built by the Mack family. They don't have the specific needs and adjustments that that ride may actually require. So it's going to be interesting to see how long it takes till Voden is back open. Judging by Europa's record, I can't imagine it'll be too long.
The Germans are good at this
stuff,
aren't
they? Things reopened very, very quickly. Obviously, you saw what happened with the Scandinavian fire that took place last year, burning down pirates in Batavia, the boat ride. Very, very quick again, that all turned around. Most of the area has already reopened. Pirates in Batavia is going to be opening again very, very soon with new effects. They are on it. You know, no time wasted. The Germans know what they're doing. Or do they? Because this is a very, very hard low to talk about. And you know, in retrospect of the situation, I understand it's something very, very confusing and can be definitely taken very insulting, depending on which eye you tend to look at it with. However, there is a park in Germany that Becca's going to tell you a little bit about that's in a little bit of deep water.
Well, yeah, it's a park called Tasmania, which, as far as I know, isn't really talked about here. I don't even think Sean's been there.
I don't know. No, I don't think he has.
I think it's a small park. And they've got a flat ride there called Eagle Fly.
It's a nice name.
It does. It sounds like a
lovely
experience.
Quite sweet.
It looks from the outside a bit like Red Force or something like that.
It does. Yeah.
It's like a plane type ride that you sit in and you spin around.
And it's got two arms on it as it rotates around.
Two arms with four planes on each arm, which very unfortunately, when looked at from a certain angle,
from a guest perspective on the ground,
does look a little bit like a Nazi swastika. So the park management, after this ride got up and running, very quickly realised that.
Yes.
Unfortunate error. Mm-hmm. And they've now stopped the ride from operating after it's only been open a couple of weeks. And they looked at it as soon as it was running and thought,
yeah, I believe it's currently in talks to get a redesign. Hopefully that ride, of course, will reopen very, very soon. I don't think it's a particular ride that guests are going to be hurrying to the park to get. I don't think I'll be jumping on a flight to get there anytime soon.
You can
for
just
it.
Imagine though the look on their faces, can't you, when they realise
And you know, and the thing is, despite how it may look, you may have seen it in the media, it wasn't an intention. There was no bad meaning behind that build, that construction of that ride.
It's just unfortunate. I think it's only from certain angles as well.
I agree.
If you looked at it flat on the ground.
I agree. You wouldn't know. And the thing is, you know, no one would hope in their right mind would build a ride knowing what it looks like. And the thing is, it's down to the common eye, what people see. It's just an unfortunate scenario that I'm sure the park will find a recovery for very, very soon. And a more respectful
redesign of the ride where possible. We've got to give a mention this week to Energylandia.
Yeah, Poland, very, very different. I mean,
this came out of the blue. Where did it come from?
Now, we've been talking about German efficiency here and, you know, how quickly things get turned around. And there's nothing more like a turnaround than a coaster that was somewhat nearly constructed, attacked by a storm, bulldozed down by the inclement weather, rebuilt, not expected to be opened until early 2020, sort of March 2020. And bang, here comes August 2019. Zadra has opened the ground-built RMC at Energylandia.
It's crazy.
It's ready. It's open.
I actually can't believe that this coaster has opened so far ahead of schedule after that massive storm. And it was like literally they announced a few days ago, oh, by the way, it's going to open on Thursday.
Yeah, they hadn't actually sent a test train round at that point either. There were no guests, not even any test dummies. The coaster had only just been completed. 3 days later, guests are on that ride from 2 p.m. and it's open. It's operating every day and it seems to have really strong rave reviews. A lot of people comparing it to the things like Untamed. It's kind of a mid-card RMC, people are saying, between Untamed, which is kind of a junior Steel Vengeance, shall we say, and then the major one, which is Steel Vengeance. It's kind of like a nice teenager coaster, almost, if you will, to kind of really get that RMC snap. And the airtime, apparently, is incredible. Really superb.
Looks amazing off-ride as well, which is always important. Always got to get a nice like photo of it. I like a photogenic coaster.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? The thing is as well, when a coaster has a really nice sign out the front as well, which a lot of these RMC coasters seem to do, definitely something very, very special, worth getting a good snap whenever we go and ride that for the first time.
It makes that trip over to Poland worth it even more, doesn't it? Because obviously
definitely.
You had Hyperion over there, which looks amazing as well. Now you've got this.
It's on the up, isn't it? You can get some really cheap flights. It's planning the right time of year to go. People tend to use, you know, like Ryanair, EasyJet, and I'm trying to think of other flight companies. Now, there's so many cheap airline companies in the UK that will really transport you abroad to get to some of these parks really, really cheap. And a lot of people tend to go to the typical ones like PortAventura, Europa Park, Fantasialand. Go to Poland, guys. There's some great coasters on offer for sure.
Cheap beer whilst you're there as well. Don't know what the milk prices are like there.
Oh, I hope they're not too expensive.
We'll have to look into that. That
could make the flight prices go down and the milk value go up. That'd be a concern.
And then just finally, this week's news. Obviously, within the last week, it has been National Roller Coaster Day. So you went over to Alton Towers.
I did.
And you met Mr. Wardley.
Oh, I'm sorry, Becca. I can see her wincing because I know she's going to tell me a sad story that I don't even know about this, but you've said you've got a John Wardley sad story. Is it sad as in emotional or is it sad as in... You know,
very emotional for me.
Okay, so for no one else then. Let's just clear that one up. So get ready for a quite an embarrassing story, is it? Is it an embarrassing story? Or?
No, it's not embarrassing. I don't know. Maybe you think it is. I really wanted to go and see John on Friday and I couldn't because I was at work. So when I was a very novice, young roller coaster enthusiast, when I was about 16, 17, I had a job.
Quite young.
Yeah, quite. Many years ago. I had a job in a restaurant in Cardiff Bay. And one evening, there I was taking the bookings, and in walks, booking a table for that evening for himself and his family, Mr. John Wardley.
Wow.
So obviously, me being a big enthusiast at the time, instantly recognised him. His family were all with him, totally shocked that I knew who he was.
Wow,
they were just
amazing.
Like, how do you know who he is? And I'm like, I'm into roller coasters.
Gosh.
I know who he is. All the people I worked with were like, why are you going nuts over this guy? This guy looks like a bit like
mad.
Jasper Carrot. But
oh, no,
like, no,
sorry, John. I'm sorry, John.
This guy is a legend. So I served him that night. I was his waitress, looked after him all night. And they were lovely. His family were so lovely. And at the end of it, he did signed me a little bit of card and it said to Bex from John. And I was like,
I bet you've got that framed on your wall, haven't you? You've looked after it.
Well, as I said, this was quite a few years ago I did treasure that lovely little bit of card.
You did?
I did treasure it
for many
years. Probably about 12 years I had that bit of card until 6 months ago when I got a dog.
Oh, no. That's the worst news.
And my little miniature Labradoodle chewed it up one day whilst I was at work. Yeah, so
sorry, John.
Absolutely gutted. My prized John Wardley autograph, which I'd kept all that time through house moves and jobs and children and everything else.
It's now mushed up with dog food in your dog's stomach. Wow, that's really sad.
But I wanted to go and see him so I could get a new one.
Of course, refresh that memory, so to speak. I mean, the thing is, you've got to appreciate that, you know, for John Wardley, I bet that was quite a surreal moment. I know he's very much recognised in the theme park community, but... going out there for a meal
evening in an Italian restaurant
and having an Italian restaurant waitress be like, oh my goodness, you're John Wardley. I mean, I know what it feels like sometimes with theme park worldwide. You know, we get stopped in some really weird and wonderful places and it's amazing to meet so many people, but I bet he was really caught off his guard there.
I think it was his wife was just like, this never happens.
Oh, wow, that's really special. No, that's a really nice, I quite like that story. 10 out of 10 on that story.
I know, but I still have, that doesn't make up for the fact that my dog's eating my autograph. So what was he like? Did he have any nice stories to tell?
I was listening to a few people in the groups before me, and he seemed to be getting a lot of questions about Nemesis.
Yeah.
And I thought, gosh, you know, it must be really overkill talking about the same ride, probably answering the same questions many times over. So I thought, right, Alex is going to mess around the questions a little bit and try and get him something a little bit unique that he's probably not heard yet today or he's probably going to hear at all over the weekend. So I decided, knowing that he has a lot of involvement, well, had a lot of involvement with PortAventura when the Two Souls Group first helped open that park, I asked him about his opinions of Stampeda, which is the dueling wooden coaster there, which John was the brainchild of. And I asked him when the last time he went and rode that coaster was, which I thought would be a really unique question. And he told me that it was in 1998, so just the second year it was operating at
the
park.
That's a long time ago.
It's a very long time ago. I was only 1 year old, Becca. we won't get into that. We won't get into that. But I was
so
one.
So John's not experienced the new trains on it?
He hasn't experienced the new trains since it's been retracked. He said he was going to consider visiting a few years ago to PortAventura because he really wanted to see Shambhala and, of course, check on his rides too that he helped build and construct over the years. And he said to me that the reason he actually didn't visit was because about 5 or 6 years ago, Stampeda wasn't actually dueling its trains like it was supposed to. If you've been there or you've been on the coast, I won't spoil it for those who haven't. It's a very, very cool feature, part of the ride. I think it kind of makes the ride, to be honest with you. He said that the trains weren't dueling and that was enough of a reason for him to not go. Amazing. Just all that hype, all that lack of holiday just because his dueling coaster. But to him, it's his baby.
Yeah.
It's like saying, you know, you're going to get to see your child one day of the year and that one day they're going to be tucked up in bed not very well. You know, you really want to make that moment magical, especially when you've had such a big part of it. But it was really nice to see John getting, you know, celebrated personally, not just for his brainchild nemesis, of course, alongside Nick Varney there, the CEO of Merlin now. But it was really nice to see the celebration of not just 25 years of Nemesis, but 25 years since John Wardley truly hit the spotlight with such an amazing coaster still to this day.
Were there a lot of people there to see him as well?
He had the crowds pouring down the Forbidden Valley to a point where he had a longer line than Nemesis, which was really worrying.
That's ironic.
I thought they were going to put like him on the queue times app or something for the day. You know, John Wardley, 20 minutes or something. Would have been great.
Just a bit longer than Jewel.
Definitely, yeah. Only just a little.
That's lovely, though. It's nice that you got
really
to meet
sweet.
Him as well. And, you know, hopefully one day we'll get him on this podcast and
get
him chatting.
Really nice.
That would
and
be, you know, an amazing
25 years, though. 25 years. And, of course, we're not just talking about 25 years of Nemesis. Obviously, 25 years of Shockwave at Drayton Manor, as we talked about in a previous episode. And, of course, 25 years of the big one at Blackpool Pleasure Beach.
Yeah.
Some news on that, Becca. Tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, so they have released a soundtrack for the big one, haven't they, to celebrate its
25 years.
Which is a nice thing. You don't often hear about a park going, do you know what, we've had this ride for 25 years, we're just going to stick a soundtrack on it.
Because it makes no money for the park. There's no profit from playing sounds into a ride. It's more about building the experience, the atmosphere, the anticipation of getting on a coaster. So it's really nice to see Pleasure Beach doing that, to be honest. I really like the idea.
And you went up and you heard it in situ, didn't you?
I did, yeah. So they've got some speakers dotted about the queue line, some big Bose speakers for the technical geeks amongst us. the audio geeks, and yeah, it was really, really nice to hear this lovely soundtrack blasting out loud. It references quite a few different things about the ride, references Geoffrey Thompson OBE, who was then the owner of the park, talking about because obviously he was the brainchild of the big one, really. Went over to Cedar Point, got on Magnum XL 200 and was like, yep, come and build me one, but I want it bigger and better. I mean, you know, it's bigger. we'll leave that one to the Coaster Opinions and Becca when she goes to Cedar Point.
Change the skyline of Blackpool forever as
completely.
Well.
Completely. Yeah, totally. It is iconic, not to use the pun twice, but it really is an icon of Blackpool, and I couldn't imagine the park without it, to be honest.
We've got a couple of clips of that soundtrack.
Created and conceived by Geoffrey Thompson, OBE. Built by Aerodynamics. 235.
对 It is very dramatic. It's the big one. You know, it is the most major roller coaster in that park. It deserves the most kind of thought-provoking, epic soundtrack. And I think that's exactly what it's got. It's really, really nice. The notable stranger is the person who has composed that soundtrack and put all that together. You may recognise his work from things such as the Hot Ice Show that's in the park and, of course, new for last year, Icon the Ride. Beautiful soundtrack, stuck in your head, and I'm sure this big one will very soon. And of course, The Notable Stranger has had a long working relationship with the park, and we are actually going to try and get him on the show in the next few episodes to come and talk to us all about his compositions and his amazing work that he's done for Pleasure Beach. So stay tuned for that.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.
So as we've mentioned in this episode, I really wanted to dig down into your American trip, because you did go and abandon us for a few weeks.
I did, just a little while. I was gone for a long time, but Andy did a great job of keeping my chair warm. Thank you so much, Andy.
I know.
I'm sure he really enjoyed it.
He did.
It's nice to hear him on two podcasts, but definitely go and check out his other one. I do absolutely love it.
It's a big Disney-based podcast, if you're a fan of that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, we do touch on Disney, but we touch on many other things as well in the theme park world. And of course, this America trip was, I'll say, the biggest thing I've ever done, and it probably will be the biggest thing I've ever done and will continue, because you can't condense down the amount I did in such a one small holiday, so to speak, if you can call it that. I'll stick with the word trip. It's less exhilarating, because Sean and I, who is from Theme Park Worldwide, of course, go check out the vlogs. They're all online. From that trip that we did, we went and saw 20. Well, I saw 19. Sean saw 20 different theme parks in the United States of America and Canada too, in a road trip, over 5,500 miles of driving, walking over 500,000 steps. We saw a lot, did a lot, got on over 200 coasters. It was an immensely epic trip.
So just going back to the start on this, I don't want to take too much away from the vlogs, because if you haven't watched them, honestly, get yourself some time. Just block out your diary. There's a lot of info there to take in. There's a lot of video there. It is well worth it.
We told people you've got a summer's worth. I mean, if you've got 6 weeks off school, that was the time, because you needed that amount of time to cover that content.
They are in depth. They will give you everything you need to know about these parks. It will almost be like you're there. It's the next best thing you can do to be in there yourself. So do go and watch the vlogs, because nothing's going to compare to that.
And you've got two very cheesy hosts as well on that. Well, three technically if you include Brett when he joined us, but some cheesy moments and some amazing things saw too.
But just going back to the start on it, how do you start with a trip like this? So you and Sean come up with this crazy idea at some point. Let's just go and do 20 theme parks in one trip.
Well, I mean, it's kind of the closest to insane you can do without being sanctioned for it, to be honest. It's it was a roller coaster of a planning journey, let alone a trip. God, I'm using all these metaphors today. I really need to find something creative for next time. I'll write some notes. But yeah, I do recall Sean and I went to Florida last September 2018, that would have been, and we talked about this American dream. Sean had been to Cedar Point earlier in the year, absolutely fell in love with the park. It's, if you don't know Cedar Point, it has more major roller coasters than any park in the world, and it has the most roller coasters out of any singular theme park in the world, which is insane. It's an insane place, and we'll come back to that in a moment, but Sean had said he wanted to go there again. He wanted to see some of the other parks around the area. Didn't mind even hiring a car, driving around, seeing some of the close by parks, maybe driving nearly 1,000 miles to see them all, like you would when you travel to Europe. And me being the brainchild of madness in the trip planning, I actually remember Sean and I sat down on Christmas Day 2018.
Did you not have anything better to be doing? Were you not eating your turkey dinner?
We'd had our turkey dinner. We sat and listened to the Queen ramble on a little bit, and then Sean and I rambled on about theme parks as per usual. Nothing new there. That or Greg's or Weatherspoons. It's one of the three. And Sean and I seem to have a bit of a thing that Christmas Day is just a day that things become reality. So in 2015, actually, Sean and I sat down around Christmas time, booked a trip to California. 2016 rolled around, we booked a trip to Asia and we saw all the Disney Asia parks and some of the parks there too. At the end of 2017, Sean and I booked Florida for 2018. So it's kind of been like one little trip, one big, you know, that's not a planned thing, that's just kind of how it's happened. And then flash forward to December 25th, 2018, Sean and I sat on his bed, his very Christmassy bed sheets, actually. It was such a festive atmosphere, let me tell you. We were just kind of chatting because he'd been watching something on TV that was Christmassy. I think we were watching Doctor Who. It was EastEnders we were watching.
You're painting a very strange picture.
I think you really need to kind of be immersed into this, you know, this planning moment.
Were you wearing festive onesies at the time?
I mean, I was just wearing my pyjamas, I think, to be honest. It was kind of a nice, chilled environment. And Sean and I said, look, what realistically can we do? How long can we go away somewhere for? Let's see what we can put together. Now, I work full-time. I work on the railways. So, you know, I am restricted on how much time I can allow myself to do a theme park trip. As many people who are probably listening to this aren't freelance, can't just go out and do their own thing, see the world. You know, Sean does very much have that privilege. Obviously, it goes alongside with his work that he does. But for me, it was really about finding time. And I kind of thought, realistically, I could push myself to 21 days, 3 weeks, have a couple of days when I get home just to get over jet lag or prepare before I leave. So all in all, you know, I'm going to be away for 20, 25 days before I'm back into the flow again. It's a long time to be out of the circuit, to be honest with you. And so it was a case of what can we see in that time? Now, when Sean and I went to Florida last year, we went on the Jimmy Fallon ride, Jimmy Fallon's Race to New York. And we said, gosh, wouldn't it be funny that wherever we do a trip to, we finish in New York. So we call it Sean and Alex's Race to New York. That was like the initial working title of this whole trip. And then we talked about where we could travel from, whether it was Ohio or we even went down to like Missouri and we saw Silver Dollar City, because I know that was on our bucket list to get on Time Traveler, which again, I'll come to later on. But then I thought, oh, hang on a minute, what have we got in Texas, which is right at the bottom of America, with New York being in the top right-hand corner. Texas is kind of the central bottom of North America. So it's a fair trek. And, you know, miles-wise, it worked out just under 5,000 miles between where we initially looked at, which was Six Flags Fiesta, Texas, and what would arguably be the furthest away part, which is Canada's Wonderland. You know, and to see so much in between, we'd have to plan in time to rest and chill out. But Sean and I then thought to ourselves, you know, 21 days we're going to go away. It ended up becoming 22 because we're traveling to Canada. But it was, you know, it was kind of a case of how much can we see in that time? How much time do we need to rest? Shall we get an RV? Shall we go and do, you know, do the real American dream and drive around in a rolling vehicle like that? And we thought, no, you know, we're going to get a car. We're going to book some hotels. It worked out the cheapest to do that. But then it was a case of, do we need rest days or do we want more theme parks, more coasters, more creds, more action? And that's exactly what we did. And the trip turned from maybe 4 or 5 parks into 20. It was chaotic.
It was a lot.
You know, it was a lot to even imagine, to think how excited we were for what we were going to see. We were really pumped. We were really ready. And, you know, we didn't really plan too much about the challenges, because you can't really expect challenges, because there's so many things that you could be preparing for that are unlikely to happen. You'd be spending more time prepping than you would building anticipation. So it's kind of just a, let's go out on a whim, let's go for it. If a hotel, you know, is falling to the ground, we just have to find another one. You know, there was really a lot of risk with this trip. I mean, yes, it paid off. I'm here now to tell the tale, but that planning stage did take months to get dates, times, opening hours, closing hours, what rides are closed, because there's two parks side by side and one of the coasters is closed for maintenance on the day we were looking to visit. We're going to make sure we swap those days around to make it work, because there's things we want to see. It was really about prioritising and also, you know, planning in the amount of time you're going to have to get to places. And to be honest with you, not every night did we have enough time. You know, it was tough.
And I think, you know, obviously on the vlogs, people are commenting and you can see it, I think, in your faces. You guys were tired. You looked knackered by, especially sort of midway through, I think, before your adrenaline kicked back in.
Yeah, it kind of took a while because, you know, when you first go on a trip like that, you have to prepare yourself into a mindset of, I am away for a long time. I need to conserve energy when I first arrive. I want to get there. I've got to take it easy. I've got to take it slow and, you know, gradually build that energy more and more. And if anything, release more towards the end, where I'm going to really need it to push my body through to its limits. Now, a lot of people have a lot of physical strength, a lot of mental strength, a lot of emotional strength. For this kind of trip, yes, you've got to have all three. But, you know, there's a certain type of energy you need, because, and a certain balance, because there's some really physically tough people we met who couldn't do our trip. There's some very emotionally tough, and same for very, you know, mentally tough. It's so demanding. And to be honest with you, there was a point where Sean and I had a conversation in the car and said, you know, why have we pushed ourselves this far? You know, and when the vision feels like it's starting to slip, you've really got to persist. You've really got to persevere. And we really wanted to prove, not necessarily people wrong, but certainly our own demons wrong, and show that we can do this. Before Sean and I travelled, I'd actually broken a toe on my left foot. I'd done that just 4 days before travel, and just before we travel, I believe the day before, could be wrong, Sean actually fell ill with a chest infection, which really slowed down his ability to talk, walk, and mentally feel in the zone.
You just know what it's like, don't you? When you're ill, all you want to do is go and lie in bed.
Yeah, and you know, to be fair with you, when did we really have a bed? If you watch those travel vlogs, a lot of the time we were getting to the room at 2 and 3am, checking out at 7am, ready to get up and ready to go to the park. They aren't really a hotel room, they're just a place to crash our heads, which we could have done in the car, and we did on a couple of occasions. you know, you have to really take it slow. My doctor had told me that I'd be fine to drive because I was driving an automatic. I just have to take it easy on my feet, you know, get some rest. That was not going to happen. There was no way of that in the world. I wasn't going to let myself down or anybody else down. My girlfriend, you know, was waiting very patiently at home. Same for Charlotte and same for all our friends who wanted to know what was going on, if we were okay. And it was really nice to see the support from the people at home. In the US too, we met some amazing people. References to our friends Gene and Larry, who we're hopefully going to get on a future episode as well, just to talk about their home park, Kings Island, and see the point. There was so much love. And actually, it's hard to explain, but the love that people give you for what you do, the support, or even the disbelief in how we've achieved something, is really compelling. But it's also a very good motivation to keep fighting, because you meet people who you think, you know what, I don't want to go back and have disappointed them or let them down. To many people who watch those videos at home, sat eating their pizza or chicken tikka masala, you know, in the evenings when those vlogs go online, you know, you have to think how much time has gone into just being there and capturing that content and replying to comments, which Sean has always been amazing at doing on YouTube. And really just that love and support that we had really got us to the end of that trip, because there were times where we were tempted just to book the next flight home and go because we didn't think we had enough.
That's interesting. So for, you know, most of us enthusiasts, we listen to this and we watch the vlogs, we think, God, I'd love to do that. Oh, that looks amazing. I would do that tomorrow.
Yeah.
Was there a point during the trip where you thought, I just don't want to go into another park? I don't want to get on another coaster right now.
Yeah, so...
Do you reach that wall?
Yeah, so the wall is... America and wall just came into my head then, but let's skip over politics. We're good at that. But the thing is, you know, you've got this emotional wall with you from the minute you get there, because you have to kind of forget that as soon as you arrive, you're not eating your own food anymore. You're not going to the same shops that you used to. You're not using the same currency. Your friends and family aren't accessible as easy. You can't just go and visit somebody. You can't just go and visit somebody who you've known for a long time. You've already taken away so much that you're used to in your comfort zone. As much as most people enjoy a holiday, which of course I do too, and I'm sure Sean does, you aren't on a holiday. You're on work, really. It very much felt like long, painstaking hours of work, where some days we were active physically, whether it's driving, riding rides, walking around, or checking into hotels for about 22 hours of a 24-hour period.
That's a lot.
And then to have 6 hours sleep and do it all over again.
Yeah.
You know, that you can't stimulate yourself to do that. It's not something that I would necessarily tell people to do, the exact trip that we did. Personally, I wouldn't do the same trip we did.
Really?
Purely for the reason of we didn't factor in any time to rest. The trip we did could have, I would say, comfortably have been done. Even to people who struggle a little bit physically, might be tough. But if you feel you have a general good, you know, stamina to your body, I would do that trip over maybe 30 days, make it a month, just so you can factor in a couple of rest days a week, just to take it easy, sit by a pool, go shopping, revitalize yourself and start again. Be in the same hotel room for more than just one night, because we didn't give ourselves that time. And that is a learning curve to ourselves as much as advice to anybody else. That kind of trip isn't possible without breaks.
And we all know how it feels after you've got done even just like a Scarefest event where the park's open till 10.
Yeah.
You know, and you've been in there since opening.
And then it's, you have to get in a car.
And you get in a car and you're driving home, drive. You're like, oh, I'm going to have a big lie-in tomorrow.
And that, but then there's 10-hour drives.
Yeah, and that's it. You can't, I can't even kind of imagine how that felt, because I know how I feel after a long day at a park. And
Let me tell you that I remember so well leaving Cedar Point. After 12 hours on the second day, and we did the last ride, the last train of the night on Steel Vengeance. There were coaster geeks everywhere. It was phenomenal. It was such an amazing atmosphere. People we just met over the 2 days we were there, and of course across the trip too. It was breathtaking to spend so much time with people. I remember riding Steel Vengeance. Park closed at 10 o'clock, and I remember we were riding Steel Vengeance about 11:15, so an hour and 15 minutes waiting in line, getting on the ride, and we were walking out of the exit, and it's nearly a mile walk from Steel Vengeance's exit to the main entrance where the car was parked. And I remember just walking that mile and thinking, I've got so much adrenaline in me from having an amazing time, which I did, and I stand by that. But if I lost my footing, I would be unconscious on the floor. You can't just stop because you make yourself ill. And Sean needed me to drive as much as I needed him to drive. It was a shared responsibility. We put far more trust in each other than probably most friends would, and I think that's a real test to our friendship. We didn't argue at any point. We had points where we would disagree, but no better than any other friends will about opinions, places to go, stop to eat. But, you know, it was really a good show that Sean and I can support each other through something so emotional. And now coming back, it's been the first time I've been able to really sit and reflect on it. And, you know, I could probably do 100 of these interviews telling you many different stories about what I experienced, because America's beautiful and I stand by that. I love the people, I love the place, and the parks are sensational. They're more amusement parks. There are theme parks. I'm not taking away from the ones that are, but the country is very, very amusement park heavy, as is Canada. But to come back to my own ground, my own bed, my own drinks, my own family is special. You know, and even to come back to work, a lot of people think, gosh, come back to work, really? But actually, the thought of coming back to work, even doing long days, long shifts, being very tired, sounds far more relaxing than some of the nights, you know, leaving Cedar Point, getting on the road for nearly 10 hours. And I remember driving to the Smoky Mountains at 8 o'clock the next morning, having already been awake for over 24 hours, seeing these Smoky Mountains and thinking, I'm driving a car in Tennessee. And I've been awake 24 hours.
Oh, God.
And I feel like I'm only inside just waking up.
Yeah.
But my body is... where is this excess energy coming from? At a point where I actually... Imagine energy was something you could hold in your two hands in front of you, like you're probably holding your phone to listen to this right now. You imagine that it was just made of ice and your hands... You had big, thick gloves on, like petrol station gloves, as I call them, and you're just trying to contain it all. You can't. Your body just releases it when it feels it needs to. Caffeine won't help. Sleep doesn't always help because it can actually damage your energy levels. It's really just a case of persisting. And, you know, that the emotional journey that with this trip, as much as it was amazing, there's so much more to it. But that's a general summary of the emotion it takes to get to that where we need to be. And that is in New York City, the race to New York complete.
I mean, like I said, looking at the vlogs, it looks amazing. The one that I obviously have to ask you about, and you've just touched on it there, is Cedar Point.
Of course, because
for me, that is the park that got me into all of this.
Yeah.
You know, as I said, as a junior enthusiast many, many years ago when they were building Millennium Force, and I watched that coaster going up, you know, through the internet. The internet was kind of in its early stages then, and we didn't have Instagram and Facebook.
No,
it was message forums and people sneaking photos on.
And if Google had an image of it, you were like, oh, I've got to say, that's my wallpaper on my computer.
Absolutely. And I thought at that point, I must have been 14, 15 at the time, I want to go to that park. And I've still not been.
I know.
Because life kind of got in the way a little bit. So obviously you said you were going.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can tell from the vlogs that you had a good time.
Yeah.
Is it as amazing as I've built it up to be in my head?
It is. Because... okay, so let me give you two different perspectives on the park. So Sean, who had been there previously and had a trip dedicated to Cedar Point, fell in love. I was running at this point about a third of the way into this big trip that we did. This was when the fatigue was hitting me hard. It took away my emotions whilst I was there, but since coming back, I have missed it terribly.
Wow.
But if you'd have asked me leaving the park that night, I would have said, I'm done. I've seen Cedar Point now. I'd go back next year. Yeah, you know, I had that kind of buzz in me, but I didn't need any more time. And I think that was because I just knew I had to keep going. I had to keep fighting through. But coming back, I want to go back to Cedar Point.
Yeah.
It's a very, very special park. Some major, major, major coasters. Of course, Top Thrill Dragster alongside Steel Vengeance and Millennium Force.
We have to talk about Steel Vengeance.
Steel Vengeance, I mean... A lot of people ask me about the scale of that coaster. When you're stood at the bottom, is it as tall looking and menacing that you think it is? And the answer is yes, it is. It's sensationally tall. It's fast. The airtime, I mean, you have purple bruises on the top of your thighs from when you've just left that restraint because you first out of your seat, I think it's like 36 seconds of airtime across the whole ride. So for 36 seconds, you're ejected from the gravity that's keeping you in your seat.
Wow.
That's incredible. And some of them are 3 seconds at one time. And RMCs don't just throw you into inversion like many coasters you may know in the UK. They hold you in them. They suspend you into that inversion to a point when you think, oh, I'm sliding, and then thrust straight into an airtime hill. It's beyond belief. And of course, Top Thrill Dragster, again, as I say, another incredible coaster. Maverick, another sensational ride there. Oh, so much. Magnum XL 200, how amazing it was to get on the coaster that inspired the big one, which was one of the first coasters I ever remember riding and being scared of riding. I used to visit Pleasure Beach. Well, I visited Pleasure Beach every year of my life. And even when I was a small child with my nan and granddad, I think, oh, one day I'm going to ride the big one. And now I've been on Magnum and Top Thrill Dragster, Maverick, so many other big rides. It's breathtaking.
So basically, it's definitely worth going out just to get to Cedar Point.
Did I use enough metaphors and words to describe it there? Yeah.
Would you say that though? If I was saying, look, I'm just going to go to Cedar Point, is that worth the trip?
I would go just for Cedar Point. Yeah. I feel that there's enough with the resort, with the beachfront, the little water park spaces nearby, to make maybe a week's worth of stay if you went down to Kings Island, but 5 days comfortably. However, Becca and I have discussed this previously about Cedar Point, because there is something that's really worth considering with a lot of theme park trips. If you're travelling to one park abroad that's a long way away, rather than maybe going for 4 days and having four days in the park, why not think of the money you're paying for 4 days of park tickets, have 2 days and buy 2 days of Fast Track. Now, I'm not a personal Fast Track user. I don't like buying Fast Track. I don't really buy Fast Track ever, to be honest. I think there's only two occasions I can name I've walked into a park's box office and bought Fast Track. But if it means that you can reduce the time at that park, but you still want an extended trip, you can see more. And this is what Sean and I did with this trip. You know, we thought we could spread these out. We could have 4 days at Cedar Point, 3 days at Dollywood, 3 days at Silver Dollar City, 2 days at Carowinds, and really split this trip out over more days. But sometimes if you can condense it down, if you're willing to buy Fast Track, there's ways to save time, energy, and you could probably do more in 2 days than someone could in five, and still have time to go and explore the restaurants, the gift shops, and the other smaller attractions the park has. So that's something really worth considering. I think, you know, we'll probably make a talking point of Fast Track on a future episode, and get some of your guys' opinions on the pros and cons, because I think it's such a great system if you want to reduce time on a trip, or reduce waiting time at least. But, you know, if you are just wanting to go there and really soak yourself in it, maybe 4 or 5 days is enough to really soak it all in.
Oh, you're just making me so jealous.
I can see her mouth watering from here.
Now.
She wants to go. Like, does anybody want to take Becca? Like, she's willing to go. Yeah, as long as you're buying Fast Track, of course, even more so.
Yeah, I would absolutely love to go. And I am jealous. I'm super jealous. But in a way, I'm so glad that you've come back and said that rather than...
You've now got somebody you know's opinion of that. And sometimes it is nice to hear other people's opinions. I think that's the power of social media and YouTube and, of course, the podcast, what we're doing right now for podcast. It's, you know, it's really, really good to hear people's voices speaking about something. You know, a lot of the time you go on TripAdvisor to get reviews, they are negative reviews. It's like every 10 comments, 9 of them are negative. You really want to get honest reviews. Listen to these people who've been, you know. Don't take it all for granted, because people tell you that, oh, you won't enjoy this, you won't like this. It happened when I went to Asia. You won't eat the cuisine, you won't like the food, nobody speaks English. I found all of those to be the complete opposite from what I've been warned. It's good to listen to opinions, but whether you choose to act on them, take them on board, or just listen to the advice generally, may just help you out a little bit.
And obviously then, talking a little bit about negativity and stuff, is there a park that you went to on the trip that you just think, I'll not go back there?
The first one that would spring to mind would be Kings Island for me. It's not a never say never, you know, because
they just announced a big
they've just announced a massive Giga Coaster, which is really, really worth it, and I'm sure it's going to really finish that park off. Because if you go back and watch the vlog from June when Sean and I visited, we didn't know about this coaster. We didn't know it was happening.
There's not even no footers going in.
No, nothing. There was no knowledge of what was coming next. So you'll actually hear Sean and I talking about this park really needs a standout coaster. Flash forward 2 months, and here comes an announcement.
Maybe they were watching it.
A major campaign. Could you imagine? Oh. Well, this is what we've talked about before. If you consider the YouTube network and all the social medias, imagine how much for the tourism trade people have made in their businesses and attractions over the years from just reviews alone. But Kings Island was one of those where the park was supposed to be up until 10 p.m. There were storms and really bad inclement weather in the area, which means rides typically close in the US for that. And I understand that. I support that completely. However, the rides closed at 7 p.m. because that's when the storm was forecast. They announced at 9 o'clock that the park was going to be closed at 9 rather than 10, which was sad, but we could have gotten over. However, what really frustrated us was we spent 2 hours sat around waiting for the opportunity just to see if there are going to be some more rides or not. To find out from when we waited at 7 till 9, the rides actually closed at 7. And even if the storm had cleared, the rides closed at 7, the staff went home.
Ooh, and so you're kind of
so you're sat
around
in a park for 2 hours, which we didn't mind waiting until the end anyway because we wanted to see the fireworks. But for that 2 hours where we could have maybe sacrificed the fireworks to get on the road,
yeah,
get on
with our drive. You're talking about how sleepy you are.
6 hour drive, it was. Yeah. It was a 6 hour drive that night. Because the time we'd waited, we'd avoided road closures. It would have been between rush hour and the time when typically night closures happen on roads, which is around 10:30, 11 o'clock, I found in the US typically. we caught that. We really got stuck in the eye of that storm, and it was really disappointing. And, you know, talking to staff members on the way out, you know, the key word is talking. I mean, I'm never the type of person to blame a person responsible for those kind of things happening a guest day out. However, it was so emotional to walk out of that park and see so many guests, families, children walking out of the park with frowns on their faces, sad, wet, because they've been waiting around for something that wasn't coming. It's 2 hours in a theme park to some people, but for people like Sean and I who travelled over 5,000 miles on a plane to be there, you know, it was really, really gutting. And it was sad that we didn't get to experience like the last ride of the night on the Beast, which I think they say is like L-Rot OTB. That is the official nickname. People have T-shirts that say L-Rot OTB.
Really?
Because last rides of the night on the Beast is like a signature thing. It's worth going there just to make sure you get that ride because apparently
the Beast kind of goes out into the forest.
Yeah, it travels
so
around
no
the forest.
There's no light around.
No,
it when
nothing.
It's dark.
And it's pitch black, and it's a classic old Woody, over 40 years old. It would have been amazing. I understand the weather, you know, you can't help that. But the storm did pass. It was raining, but it did pass. We were disappointed. You know, it was more in the lack of information provided. They wanted people to sit in the restaurants and spend money, go in the gift shops and spend money, walk around the little outlets that were open and again, spend money. It just felt like a bit of a con, which was a shame. But that would be the only park I would say I urgently wouldn't rush back to. In terms of brand, Six Flags were very disappointing with their operations.
Again, this is a story that I've heard, you know, since way back when I started getting into all of this. It was always Six Flags, you know, they kind of do stuff a bit on the cheap.
You pay to get in the park, that's the last time you'll get the good service. It's, you either get on it or you don't. They're not bothered, they're not interested, and it's a shame because there are some very passionate employees in the Six Flags parks. You know, the on-the-ground staff were lovely, but the operations and decisions that were being made up above ruined the experience for the guests. And I will sit here now and happily say that Six Flags, for me, are the worst theme park operators in the world. You know, a lot of people give Merlin stick in the UK. And in Europe throughout, especially in Germany, I'm aware that, you know, Merlin do get a bad rap. But can I tell you something? God, I'm singing Merlin's praises here. But, you know, I've had a few frustrations over the years with Merlin as a whole. But one thing I will always value is that they do care. They do care about their guests. There are things that are peeving and you think, oh, that's really frustrating, but I can get over it. Six Flags, you can't justify the mood they put you in. And you don't leave the parks disappointed or upset or frustrated. You leave angry.
Wow.
You know, you leave really angry thinking, right, I am not returning here. And it just seemed like a call of the trip. And every time we went to a new Six Flags park, we really tried to start again, turn the clock back. This isn't a Six Flags park, it's just another theme park. And we kept having a Six Flags day, as they call it. And that's a notorious term because they want you to have a Six Flags day. That is their branding for marketing. But a Six Flags day to us ends in anger and driving, and where you're actually clenching the steering wheel because you just can't wait to leave their parking lot, knowing you're not stood on their property for another 5 seconds. When a park has that power to destroy the guests' opinions like that, that means that change is needed and urgently. And it's a shame because I have some amazing coasters and rides.
I was going to say, you just put me off going to any Six Flags
park. I'm sorry about that.
But I'm sure there are some
on the light side, again, the rides and attractions are worth it.
I'm
just be aware that you might not get on them. That's the worry.
That's what annoys you. Know me, park operations is a massive thing for me. When I see a ride being operated badly or slowly for no reason or just not got enough staff on it, winds me up because it could be so much better. So,
I think for me, you know, like I'm gonna mention something a little bit different here. Oakwood in Wales, okay? I visited for the first time a few weeks ago, went for the ECC's Welsh weekend of the European Coaster Club to go and experience the park. I've never been. I've been talking to many people about going over the years. Becca and I discussed Megaphobia, many of the rides several times over. I wanted to go and see that park. But one thing that really compelled me about Oakwood is how much they care, to a point where if you have a bad day, it's not got to a point where you're angry and you have to go to guest services. Somebody in that park has picked up on it and is going to provide you something to make your day better, whether it's an ice cream or a return ticket to come another day or another season. And I've noticed that on their social media, if they feel that guests haven't had the service of rides availability because of the weather or just weather delays in general, they're offering complimentary return tickets to the guests who attended that day, just telling them to retain their tickets. To me, that is a park that cares.
Yeah.
And it proves, because the staffing there, listen, it's a personal touch. You actually get conversation. You walk past a staff member, they just say hello. And it's not forced. They're not paid to do that. It's natural. And to me, natural customer service is one of the most important things. If you can do the basics from what a company require, fantastic. Go in there, do your job, speak to people, show that you want to listen to them and help them out. But that personal touch you put on there, that's what's going to make your day better and their day better and the park survive more. And it's the same with any business, any customer service role. I really believe that.
Turning things around slightly, and like I said, I don't really want to take away from the vlogs, because you can really only experience all of this by going and watching those vlogs and seeing this for yourself. I just want to touch on one more park, which took me by surprise, and I had no idea this park was going to be anything like this until I saw the vlog. And that is Silver Dollar City.
Yeah.
Which has immediately jumped way, way up on my bucket list as a park that I want to go to, purely off the back of that vlog, because I'd heard of it, and obviously I'd heard of Time Traveller and all this stuff.
Yeah.
I had no idea it was such an amazingly, beautifully themed park. Did you know that before you went there? Was it what you were expecting?
I kind of understood that it was following a similar pattern to Dollywood in terms of it's very much countryside-based, natural beauty, themed buildings. It's a theme park. Despite most of the parks we were doing on that trip being amusement parks, this was a pure theme park. It wasn't just about the rides, it was the shows, the atmosphere, the cast that worked there, and so much more. And, you know, to start this topic off really about Silver Dollar City, I will go out there and say that it was my favourite park of the whole trip.
Wow. There you go. There's a difference between that.
The word is outstanding. And it's not amazing, it's outstanding. It is not in a league of any of the others. It's on its own, and it deserves to be in that God tier. Sorry to use
the
internet.
In the hierarchy of
American theme parks, that's where it stands to me. It had such a Disney feel, and I'm going to use that word again. I'm going to use the magical Disney word. Because to me, there weren't any gaps in the detail. Attention to detail is important, whether you're owning an amusement park or a theme park. Safety-wise, theming-wise, atmosphere, customer service, operations, food and drink, retail, whatever it is, it's all about those standards. And that park over-delivered, in my opinion. I thought at first that this park couldn't be real because it's presented beautifully. You're captivated the minute you arrive. There's transport to get you to the entrance, and the employees are actually talking. They're walking along the vehicle, talking to you. They want to inform you of what you may need to know. The map is beautiful. It's so well laid out. It's very pretty. It's very floral. It's presented nice, but one of the side features of that is every 2 weeks, there's a newspaper that you're given free of charge, which has all the information about the latest show times, what's happening in the park, all the latest information, where you can find certain deals in the restaurants, what the shops have on offer. It actually felt like a small village.
Wow.
Not a theme park. It felt like a village with rides, not a theme park themed to a village. It was beautiful because when you walk down Tower Street at Alton Towers, to use a good example, the buildings on either side are beautiful, and you see the towers at the end there. The difference is with Silver Dollar City, all the buildings are real shops. They are real places ran by families that live in the local area that share the responsibility. Oh, my dad owns it. These are conversations I was having. Oh, my dad owns it, but he's off work today. He's doing some work on the ranch at home. So I'm here just running it for a few hours.
Wow.
But when I close, my mum's going to come down for a few hours and finish off the day. It's real. It's happening. These are things you have in a conversation at your local post office, not things you expect in a theme park, but it's so nice. My favourite example is, and I haven't told Becca this actually, I went to a little food unit in the middle of the park one day at Silver Dollar City, and there was a lady who was working behind the counter. I think I remember her name was Patricia. Very, very nice lady, and she was selling warm, like, giant cookies. Just a basic unit like you'd expect in any other theme park, little temporary setup shop. And I went and bought one, and I said, oh, they smell delicious, they smell really nice. And she said, thank you, I baked them fresh this morning. And I'm like, what, you came in early this morning to do it? And she told me that actually, no, but in the park, underneath some of their main staff facilities, they actually have kitchens where the people who are running their own units in the park can go and prepare their own meals to sell on the park that day or the night before, and it's open 24 hours.
Wow.
So she'd got to work at 7 a.m. to make these fresh cookies to make on sale for the whole day.
I've never heard of that happening.
No, and but do you know what? I wish it happened more.
Yeah.
I really do, because do you know, that to me, if it had, the park had, you know, the scale of some of the rides that like Six Flags and Cedar Fair had, along with the high intense theming. Every employee in that park is wearing a themed uniform. There aren't maintenance jackets. They are check shirts with dungarees and black steel toe caps so they can still maintain the ride but not take away from that themed
atmosphere.
Sounds
like the little maintenance engineers in theme park. Do you remember the old computer
yes.
game?
Yeah.
Sounds like they dress like that.
Yeah, they are a little bit like kind of your Farmer Joe style employees. Same for the toilet cleaners. They're not wearing, you know, these detergents. Same for the chefs in the restaurants. They're not in just chef whites. They are in themed employee uniforms. Tick, tick, tick. There wasn't a bin that was out of branding. If Coca-Cola bottles were in a fridge, there were stickers along the fridge to cover the label, so initially you didn't know you were buying Coca-Cola, and it would just say, like, you know, soda punch and stuff. And it's little things like that that just tick it off to be what I would personally describe as the perfect theme park. Again, if it had the infrastructure, some of the Cedar Fair parks, it had the sprinkling of investment that Disney can afford to do, personally, it would be the greatest theme park in the world, in my opinion.
They have just announced, of course, a massive investment, haven't they, with Mystic River Falls.
Mystic River Falls, the new water area for the park, shall we say. The park is very much land-based. There's a big dig out in the middle of the park right now, at the time of recording anyway, from when I went, where they've been putting in Mystic River Falls, and we didn't actually know about it when we visited that it had a name, and we kind of knew what was going in. But that park is already pretty jam-packed. I mean, you've got Time Traveler, which is an incredible max spinning coaster, one of my favorite coasters in the world, definitely a top 10 coaster. Outlaw Run, an absolutely insane RMC coaster, personally would topple Wildfire for me, and it would sit nicely just under Steel Vengeance in terms of my favorite RMCs. So again, probably near a top 10 spot, if not already in there. There's so much in that park, some really unique coasters and rides as well too, and to have a rapids that's going to go in just like Mystic River Falls, really going to complete
it's that. A bit of a crazy rapids though, isn't it? It's got a massive drop on it.
Yeah, so obviously SeaWorld in Orlando currently have Infinity Falls, which is the tallest drop on a rapids ride anywhere in the world. Silver Dollar City were like, here you go, SeaWorld, hold my themed can of beer, very much themed, you know, with my checkered shirt, whilst we build even bigger. CX, it's going to be the world's tallest drop on a rapids ride anywhere in the world. I know rapids have had a really bad rap the last few years. A lot of people say in the health and safety involved and whether they are safe. I feel that, you know, technology does evolve, and sometimes it is hard when you have such modern technology like we have today. We will never have a technological advance again, I don't think, in our lifetimes anyway, like we had from back in the early 90s to what we have now in terms of theme park engineering. You know, the fact that everything's digital now, you can control queue lines from your app and the flow. You can even have automatic barriers controlled from a smartphone in a queue line. That technology is now out there. The VR and so much more. Safety will evolve with the technology. However, it's very hard to take the old and make it the new, or protect the old with the new health and safety that's involved in the world that we require more of day by day. You know, I think we're getting there slowly as you know, as attractions and leisure departments across theme parks and water parks and many other things in the world, like museums even, so much has come a long way. It's just, you know, making sure that, of course, Mystic River Falls, for instance, is the safest but also the most themed and dynamic ride that the park have built. I feel that Silver Dollar City are onto a winner with that ride. Really excited to see that when it's finished.
So needless to say, you'll be going back there.
100%. I would look, you know, I originally looked whilst away on this trip if I could find time to go just for a few days later this year. It meant that much to me that I could have returned the same year and felt happy about it. Pretty cheap park to get into, really, compared to some of the others.
How much does it cost to get in?
I can't remember an exact price, but I feel like it was around about $80 for 2 days, or it was like 50 for one day.
It's really not bad, is
but
it?
But what, you know, what's $50? I mean, right now, $50 is about £50. But typically, you know, maybe £40. Pay nearly £60 to get into Alton Towers. And you do for Thorpe Park pay £60. But to go into a theme park like that, and a themed park, not just a theme park, on that scale, incomparable. And you can get dual tickets with Dollywood as well. Day visit to Silver Dollar City, day visit to Dollywood. Even though they're very far apart, that's amazing to me. Really, really beautiful. Branson, Missouri. The park's in the middle of nowhere, but it's breathtaking.
Well, like I said, you've moved it right up my bucket list. Coaster of the trip for you?
I'm going to say Time Traveller, to be honest with you. I've got to kind of stand by it because it's such an incredible ride. Really unique. That drop at the beginning, as you roll out of the station, you're into a near vertical. Well, I think it is a vertical drop, actually, complete vertical. It's so hard to get the scale of it because it literally falls down the side of the building. And some fantastic launches. A spinning coaster too, built by Matt Rise. Really smooth, lap bar restraints, like an icon. You're holding on just in front of you. It is wonderful. That is hands down the coaster of the trip for me.
And like you sort of touched on it, you do it all again, but yeah, maybe just a little bit of a rest.
A little bit of sleep in between wouldn't hurt nobody. Certainly a bedtime cup of milk and some sleep wouldn't hurt too much.
Like I said, you can see all these vlogs, obviously, on the Theme Park Worldwide YouTube channel. Do go and watch them. Give yourself some time because you will get addicted into them. You fall down that YouTube hole, I always find, with the Theme Park Worldwide videos.
People call it the Netflix effect. You put one on thinking, I'm going to look at this and see what it's like. 10 hours, like, oh, no, I need to stop, but I can't. Yeah. It's really nice that people have that, though. Yeah, please do go check out the vlogs that Sean has put online. They're all available there. Go and have a look at the social media posts. Go back through the Instagram and the social medias and see the memories we captured. And Sean and I did a very nice trip summary at the end, talking about the cost and how we did it all, putting it all together, what we saw, how we did it, where we went. And what's really interesting, I think this is quite a nice point just to finish on. Sean and I actually only had one photo of us, the two of us stood together without anybody else involved across the whole trip, taken by somebody else.
Wow.
We took a lot of selfies. We took a lot of photos with people who, love Theme Park Worldwide or have joined us on the trip as a group. But together, there is only one photo of just the two of us wearing the matching shirts we had made just done for the trip. And that is actually the thumbnail photo for the trip summary video. So when you do click on that, just take note of that. Fun little fact for you there.
Podcast. Just go ride it.
So this is Just Gotta Ride It. We do this every episode. We find out about a roller coaster that you really should just go and get on, to be honest. Going to do things a little bit differently this week, though.
Yeah, I think this is the first time we're ever roving out of the studio to a point where one of us is not going to be here. So what I'm going to do is just now, I'm going to take my headphones off. There we go, just put those there. And I'm going to jump on a plane over to Toronto, back in time as well. I'm going to jump in the DeLorean.
You've been on Time Traveller.
Now I am a time traveller, yeah. Indeed, I've got a themed uniform for it too. I am going to jump onto an aeroplane back in time, back to the USA road trip that Sean and I did, and I'm going to ask Sean what his Just Gotta Ride It is. Let's go over to Canada right now.
Now, I'm going to keep this quite basic, really. I might have done over 1,000 coasters around the world, but as Parkcast is a British podcast, I think really it should be kept in Britain, and we should really celebrate something in the UK. So I would say you've got to go and ride the roller coaster in Great Yarmouth.
Brilliant.
Something a bit different. It's a scenic railway, and it makes me sad really when a lot of people out there will only visit the likes of Alton Towers, Thorpe Park, Chessington, Blackpool Pleasure Beach, when actually
it's overlooked.
There's some other really good parks out there. And for me, Great Yarmouth, yes, it's a long way from the Midlands or down south, but it's a park what gets overlooked so much. You've got the classic roller coaster there. It's the second oldest roller coaster in the UK after the scenic railway down at Dreamland, and it's brilliant. Honestly, it's a fantastic ride. Like, go out there and ride it. You've got really good views of all the seafront. It's right on the beach, and it's one of them rides, much like the scenic, where it's got an onboard brakeman, so every ride's a bit different on there. Really, it's a good traditional ride. Unfortunately, it hasn't got like all the British branding on there and stuff like it. I think it should have. It's actually got American branding on it, where personally, with it being such an icon for the UK, I think it should have like the Union Jack and stuff on it, really. However, in terms of the ride itself, you should go and check it out. It's a great ride. It's the second oldest in the UK. I know that's a bit debatable, because technically the scenic down at Dreamland, that was pretty much completely rebuilt. However, as some components are still standing from when that opened, I would still class that as the oldest personally in the UK. But yeah, definitely go and check it out. Roller coaster, at Great Yarmouth Pleasure Beach. Something a bit different there. I bet you wasn't expecting that.
Interesting choice.
Yeah, very different choice
there,
my
Sean. I didn't think he was going to go for that.
Sorry, I've just got to get my breath back. It was a long flight.
Yeah, you're jet lagged.
I'm exhausted. Like, I'm not going to lie to you, Becca. But yeah, very interesting choice. I mean, a lot of people, we've talked a lot about the US in this video. Oh my goodness, let's try that again.
Nobody needs that in their lives.
Nobody needs to see us two sat here right now. We're sweating in the studio as we're talking. We talked a lot about America, but it is really nice to celebrate some of the coasters we do have available here at home. You know, go to Great Yarmouth, get on roller coaster. Sean is completely right. Very unique. Support the parks that we have in this country. You know, they might not be here forever if we don't. You might have a bad day. Everybody has bad days. You have a bad day at work, it doesn't stop you from going to work. You still have to do it. Persevere. Give the parks your love. Give them your support. If you have a bad day, talk about it, but don't, you know, don't find ways of shutting it down, or, you know, just think, where would we be in the world without these leisure activities, whether it's bowling or ice skating or theme parks? They're so important, but you've got to look after the ones close to home too. Great Yarmouth, guys, go and visit it. Go and get on roller coaster. Go and see the brakeman. Make sure he's actually doing the brake.
It is. No, I went on that roller coaster just a few weeks ago. I was on holiday in Norfolk and I dragged the family over. How are we going to go on the roller coaster? We literally just went to go on that. And it's nuts. The brake guy's there. He's in the middle of the train holding the brake lever. They push the train out of the station.
Yeah, just give that a little bit of kick. That's Becca and I in the morning, actually. Just need a little bit of a kick to get out the door in the morning. But yeah, no, definitely go and check out that coaster. Really special, really old ride, classic.
And that's it for this week's episode of Parkcast. Hope you've enjoyed it. Hope it's given you some insight into Alex's big strata trip. We will be getting the next episode out very, very soon, so do stay tuned for that. If you've liked us, please do rate and subscribe us on Apple Podcasts, and we will catch you again very soon.
Thank you very much for listening. Have a great evening, guys, or wherever you are in the world. Have a great morning.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.